Chapter 33.
Blast it!
Over Sial's helmet speakers, Wedge sounded aggrieved.
He's going to get himself...
But Sial saw, as Wedge must, Tycho's X-Wing threading its way through the barrage of turbolaser fire with the ease of an airspeeder dodging repulsor lift lane markers. A moment later, the X-Wing and the shuttle were out of sight, swallowed by the Star Destroyer.
All right. Raykel, leader to squadron. Form up on me. It's time to annoy another shuttle. Four, you're at your own discretion.
I'll stick with you, leader. My alliance duties are done for the moment.
Good.
Wedge banked toward the distant center point station, and the Raykels followed. Corellia, Coronet, Command Bunker, Prime Minister's Office. The hologram of General Fenner swam into resolution before Minister Tepler, who adjusted a knob on the desk beside him. Fenner was suddenly of normal height.
General, we don't have time to fence. Centerpoint Station is under attack. The enemy appear to be trying to board and assume control. Where are the nearest Confederation forces you could send to aid us?
We have a few ships near Corellian space, mostly doing reconnaissance. Nearest beyond that will be at Commonore.
Fenner frowned.
But as I told Prime Minister Coyen, Corellia can fend for herself while he remains obstinate.
Tepler nodded.
I suspect that Coyen will not remain obstinate much longer. Have your forces standing by to jump into our system.
Fenner nodded.
Understood. We will stand by for confirmation that obstinacy is at an end.
Tepler hit a button, and Fenner disappeared. He hit another to transmit to the assistant in the next office.
Get me Coyen. Immediately.
Aboard the Anakin Solo.
Sir?
This time Neville's voice carried some urgency.
We have unsubstantiated reports that there are Jedi and saboteurs aboard. We do know that there is a disturbance in the main hangar bay.
Kytus, eyes still closed, raised a hand to forestall further words. He needed to concentrate. His forces were taking the Corellian defenders to pieces, and he could afford no distractions. On the other hand, he could not afford to ignore the possible presence of Jedi either. He carefully withdrew from the active influence of his ship commanders, then opened himself up to a different flow of the Force. Yes, there were Jedi aboard. Luke, Ben, Saba Sebatine, his mother. His eyes snapped open, and his connection to his commanders faltered, vanished.
Security.
Tebbutt, answering from her station below the bridge walkway, portside, sounded composed as usual.
Sir.
Confirm Jedi. They'll be coming here for me.
Yes, sir. Initiate Plan Bastion.
That's correct.
Kytus took a deep breath. His ships and boarding parties would have to succeed without benefit of his battle meditation. He needed all his focus now. His focus and the forces he had assembled against this specific eventuality. Even now, security teams would be assembling at strategic choke points between the hangar bay and the bridge. Space-tight blast doors would be closing and sealing at other critical points. Backup officers would be entering the auxiliary bridge, ready to assume control of the Anakin Solo if things became too dangerous or frantic for officers here to do their work. And Kytus's additional defenders should be arriving. The bridge doors opened, and they marched in. A double column. 8 YVH combat droids in all. 2 turned to face the stern as the blast doors there shut. 2 dropped to the officers' pits, 1 on either side, their mass causing deck plates to crumple as they hit. The other four marched forward, then, 4 meters short of Kaidus's position, turned toward the stern. More would be stationing themselves elsewhere in the ship. Kaidus didn't think these measures would stop the Jedi, but they might whittle down the numbers of Jedi. They had to. Jason could defeat his mother or Ben without trouble. Saba with difficulty. Saba plus Luke would be impossible odds. One of the masters had to fall if Kaidus was to survive this day. Moving so fast that they blurred, the 4 Jedi, breather masks over their faces, emerged from the edges of the smoke cloud. The security team at the entrance to the turbolift corridor opened fire. Too late. The Jedi were already among them, striking with fists, feet, and in Saba's case, tail. 6 security personnel fell in an instant, their blaster rifles clattering to the deck plates, barely audible over the alarms howling through the hangar bay. Iella and Han, R2-D2 between them, emerged from the smoke, removing their own masks. Luke gave them a nod, clapping his hand on Ben's back. "All right, time to move out. R2?" The astromech wheedled his confirmation, then turned and rolled along the hangar wall toward the nearest data jack. Ben swung toward the doorway into the corridor and launched a kick. A ship's security officer, not visible before Ben began his maneuver, rounded the corner and ran right into it, catching Ben's heel across his jaw and staggered back into his men. One was alert and nimble enough to jump clear and aimed his rifle. Han shot him in the gut, the stun beam folding the man over and putting him down. The other Jedi leapt forward, making quick work of the rest of the squad. Han holstered his blaster and smiled at his wife. "Nice not to have to do all the work myself for once." Raikel's squadron approached the stern of a troop transport shuttle. It looked as though it had already sustained damage in this battle. The bow was blackened all along the starboard side, with a fracture pattern on the viewport suggesting that the transparasteel was on the verge of cracking, of venting its atmosphere into space. But Sial knew it was a sham. The battle damage was nothing but a paint job. The shuttle accelerated away from the X-wings, toward the station and the battle raging all around it.
"Just like before." Wedge's voice was matter-of-fact. "Shoot, but don't hit."
The X-wings closed in, firing. The shuttle broadside rocked as a Raikel near hit grazed its shields. Saya held onto the webbing across his chest with a white-knuckled grip of death.
"Hey, doctor!"
The shout came from the cockpit, where up until a moment before, the pilot had been singing something about a drunken Deveronian spacer and the females he loved in each port.
"Which end? Talus or Trollis?"
"Weren't you awake at the briefing? Trollis end!"
Saya stared aghast at what little he could see of the pilot's back and neck through the cockpit door.
"Talus? Trollis!"
"That's the end toward Talus, right?"
Saya took as deep a breath as he could, intending to blow out eardrums with the volume of his reply, and then he caught sight of Kip Duron. The Jedi Master was grinning, shaking his head.
"He's messing with you, Doctor. Pilots do that."
Saya let out his breath with a whoosh and glared.
"I'll shoot him after we dock."
Aboard the Anakin Solo, Kaidus kept track of the battle on one monitor and of the progress of the Jedi on another. The battle was going well enough, even without his help. Casualties were higher, of course, but they were mounting among the enemy as well, and reports had several shuttles worth of guardsmen and commandos now boarding Centerpoint through captured airlocks, and meeting tough resistance from station defenders. Luke, Ben, and Saba were occasionally visible on security holocams. They would appear at some hardpoint, spend a few moments to take out the defenders there,
and cut their way through the next set of blast doors in turn. Kaidas hadn't spotted his mother, though he had felt her presence, as he had felt Luke, searching in the Force. Luke had found him easily enough. Kaidas wasn't hiding. Leia's presence, however, had brushed over him and gone on. Kaidas wondered if she might be wounded, which would account both for the fact that she wasn't keeping up with the others and that her ability to detect him seemed to be reduced. On a new holocam view, a space-tight blast door began glowing. A lightsaber blade emerged through it and began cutting a slow circle into the hardened Durasteel. On the near side of the blast door, four YVH droids, the first the Jedi would encounter here, withdrew several paces and set up in a firing line. Center Point Station, Fire Control Station. Sadris Koyan used a handkerchief to mop away sweat running down his cheeks. He addressed the head technician on duty, the bearded man who called himself Vibro, the arrogant neck who had once lectured him on station programming and thumbs in the eye.
"Any response from Admiral Neathal?"
Vibro looked back toward him and shook his head.
"How can I—"
Koyan cut his words short before asking the technician a question the man could not answer. "How can I compel Neathal to surrender if she won't talk to me?" He couldn't just destroy an uninhabited world of the Coruscant system as a warning shot. Centerpoint's main weapon might fail again, be inoperable for several days. When he fired, it would be on the world of Coruscant herself. But if he fired without first talking to Neathal, while he might win the war, the Alliance forces here wouldn't know to give up, and they might take the station and kill him before they realized they were defeated. And then they wouldn't be defeated. As if reading his mind, Vibro grinned.
"I think you should just do it, sir."
"What?"
"Destroy Coruscant. Show them what this station is made of. We have reconnaissance ships in the Coruscant system, don't we? They'll get excellent recordings."
The man raised his arms, forming a circle, then mimed a big sphere, suddenly collapsing to nothingness. Koyan stared at him, aghast. Aghast at the notion of killing billions for the sake of seeing what it looked like, rather than for real political gain.
"Get back to work."
"Yes, sir."
The technician faced forward again, then stared down at his board.
"Incoming message for you."
"Neathal?"
"Tepler."
"Put it on."
Vibro adjusted controls. A hologram of Tepler appeared in front of Koyan. He looked worried. Tepler glanced around.
"Sir, you need to confine the audio on this."
"Directional audio, right now."
Vibro nodded, not looking back, then raised a hand, thumb up, to indicate it had been done. Tepler's next words had the faint, tinny quality of an audio stream that was being confined to the hearing of one listener.
"Sir, we've been analyzing the enemy attack. We don't think it's just directed at capturing the station. Where are you now?"
"Fire control, of course."
"We're seeing a pattern of enemy movement through the station's passageways. They're ignoring routes that would allow them to sabotage or capture the station more efficiently. They're headed straight for you."
Koyan felt a flutter in his chest.
"For me?"
"I suspect that they have war trials in mind, sir."
I
have a shuttle standing by. Airlock Epsilon 34G. Well away from the intruders. It'll get you back here safe in minutes."
Koyan shook his head.
"I have to monitor the situation from here. Decide if and when to fire.
Admiral Delpin and I can monitor from the command bunker until you arrive. Transmit us joint firing and command authorization, and we'll stay on top of things until you arrive and resume command.
Options and consequences clicked through Koyan's mind. Actually, that was an ideal solution, especially if the need to fire came while he was in transit. Tepler and Delpin would press the button. History would credit Koyan for effective leadership if all went well, and would blame Tepler and Delpin if there was any significant outrage. He nodded, decisive.
Done. Make sure that shuttle is there when I arrive.
It will be.
Tepler's image faded. Koyan turned toward the tech.
Until you hear from me again, you're taking orders from the Minister of Information and Admiral Delpin.
Vibro looked back, hopeful.
But we will be able to fire?
Koyan nodded, projecting confidence.
I'm sure of it.
Rake six to squad!
Twill's voice was as musical as any Rhodian's, but Sial could hear strain in his tone.
Incoming starfighters dead ahead, coming over the curve of the station.
Sial glanced between the heads-up display on the canopy before her and the more informative sensor monitor beneath. They didn't show the incoming units, but Twill's X-Wing had better sensors.
Squad, leader, loosen up by flights.
Wedge's starfighter suddenly rose, relative to the shuttle they pretended to pursue, and Sinola and Sial followed. Corrin's two wing pairs rolled to starboard and descended. Jaina's drifted to port. And then the enemy were there, cresting Center Point Station, lined up so their angle of approach was directly between the Raykels and the Star Corel. Sial gave the enemy points for effectiveness and tradition. Though they weren't attacking in atmosphere, they were still diving on their foes out of the sun. They were X-Wings, and their sensor designation was Rogue. Wedge and Sinola were juking and jinking, just as Sial recognized the designation. She followed suit instantly, just in time for a long-distance salvo of quad-linked lasers to flash through the space her starfighter had just vacated. The enemy, a full-strength squadron, broke into three flights of four, each turning toward a corresponding unit of Raykels. Laser fire crisscrossed between the two forces, passing harmlessly as the starfighters danced out from under one another's aim. Then the opposed squadrons came together, wing pairs whirling away as if in their flight they were trying to replicate the intricate spiral patterns of complex proteins. Two X-Wings came after Wedge. One each angled toward Sinola and Sial. Sial dropped back, putting all her X-Wing's discretionary power toward her rear shields. She hadn't yet fired. Still didn't fire. She couldn't fire on an ally. She saw her father riddle one enemy with laser fire, damaging the starfighter, but not putting it out of combat. His other enemy chewed at his tail, just as Sial's opponent was hammering away at hers. She couldn't fire on an ally, nor could she do anything less than give her whole effort for her father. The two absolutes were mutually exclusive. They swelled up inside her like a bomb going off. She heard the cry of outrage and confusion before she knew it was hers, and acted before she fully understood what she'd decided. She decelerated hard, far more sharply than was normal for X-Wing pilots, but she was used to being tossed around by the violent maneuvering thrusters of her Aleph, and threw discretionary power into her lasers. Her opponent overshot her, beginning a sudden roll to starboard, but her lasers caught him. Stitching away at his thrusters, he disappeared in a flash. Debris ignited as it hit and bounced off her forward shields. She turned after her father, tracking his second opponent, firing at him. She didn't try to hit him, not at first. Her salvo missed deliberately to his starboard, causing him to flinch instinctively to port, away from Wedge. She restored her shields to normal fore and aft balance and followed, herding her target away from her father. She saw a tiny flash to starboard. Her father's target was still flying, but his R5 unit had just exploded under persistent laser fire. Her own target wobbled, beginning a climb, then suddenly decelerated. Sial yanked her yoke back, assuming his climb was a fake, and hit her thrusters. Her enemy seemed to fly in reverse, passing beneath her, nose now pointed downward. Her reflex had been correct, and he was oriented away from her, unable to bring his lasers to bear. She continued her climb, looping around in a tight 360-degree curve, and saw her target doing the same, coming back toward her for a face-to-face pass.